What's good, Dallas? This is your girl, Brianna Javon. And if you've been thinking about starting a podcast or taking yours to the next level, I've got you covered. Book a podcast power session with What's Good Productions. In just 30 minutes, we'll tackle your ideas, crush those hurdles, and get your podcast ready to shine. Visit whatsgood-productions.com or click the link in the show notes. Now let's get ready for the show.
Jay, you earn $10. All right, you got a dollar to put in church because that's where you're at. And I'm taking a dollar to invest for you. And you got $8. So if you needed $10, you need to go do some more work because that whole $10 is not yours.
The What's Good Podcast.
Are you ready?
Your number one source.
To all the keys in the industry.
With Brianna Javon.
It's the What's Good Podcast.
What's good?
Hey, ladies and gents, this is your girl, Brianna Javon, and we are here with another episode of What's Good Podcast, and we are in season 10. We are talking all things wealth management, and I am super excited about who we have today, Mr. Kevin. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
That's good. Yes. So we're going to get into more things of wealth management, finance, all the things. But before we get started, we always do an icebreaker. Okay. So are you ready for your icebreaker?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
So your icebreaker is, when you hear the word wealth, do you think more about freedom, legacy, or opportunity?
Legacy.
Okay, and why?
Hands down, wow.
That was easy.
Yeah, right. My apologies. Because what I think of, like, wealth is, if from a visual standpoint, like the infinity of the ocean. You know what I mean? And so, yeah. And so that is like something, you know, if you've ever been on a cruise ship or if you've been on a beach and you're standing there and you're looking out and it looks like there's an edge to it, but you know that it goes on and on, right? And so that's like wealth, right? Like, seeing it is tangible. You can touch it. You can get your feet in the water. But that's just one, like, that's just part, the beginning of the legacy that's way out there in the abyss that we'll may never ever get to explore ourselves. But if we do it right, our families should be able to see that. You know what I mean?
Good.
And then, So I think definitely legacy.
Okay, we're starting off right.
Right,
that was good.
All right, cool.
Okay, so we are going to get into our genuine conversation, and we always start it off with who is the guest.
Okay.
So for you, who is Kevin?
All right, so I'm Kevin Jefferson. I grew up here in Dallas, Oak Cliff, Texas. That's my hood.
I know, that's right.
So public school product. I was actually born in Illinois, but I moved here very young. So this is Texas home for real. And public school product, you know, went to school in Oak Cliff, high school, Skyline High School, graduated from United States Military Academy at West Point, you know, just a happy-go-lucky guy, you know. You know, obviously, I was served in the Army, was a military officer when I graduated from college, and just kind of have been enjoying the little gifts that life has given me, you know. Graduated, went to the Army, went into finance, you know, eventually got married, got divorced, got married, got kids. And but, like, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm a guy that just really takes life as it comes. And also, I think one thing that people don't know about me so much is back in the day, so this is a kind of a good story about me. So back in the day, before the internet is what it is today,
right.
It was just like a bulletin board system. So that was back in the days of what we call Netscape, like in the 90s. And so Netscape was the big browser, like Internet, you know, Explorer and all that stuff. And but you could connect to people, like the chat rooms now, it was like a bulletin board system. Mm-hmm. So like, I think it was the University of Iowa. They had a BBS or whatever. And so you would chat to people from like all over the country and at different colleges. And so you had to have a handle, right? Like that was your nickname. Like when people got at signs now,
yeah.
Like it was like, yeah. So mine was Eclectic Poet.
And
so,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So I love writing. I write poetry. I have the, you know, prose and stuff.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So I'm big into creative writing and stuff like that. So yeah. So that's the little soldier poet. That most people don't get, get to see about me. So yeah, that's the non-finance side, but yeah, I'm a creative, yeah, for sure.
Do you do spoken word? Like,
I have not done it recently, but gotcha. I've been actually leaning back into writing, and I'm leaning back into I'm wanting to get back out and do more spoken word. So just, you know, I love that space. And I remember it was funny how you kind of get into your living life, and I try to find moments where I can go back and reflect and say, okay, what part of your journey has like truly brought you joy? And are you still connected? Are you still connected to that, like in a real way? And I think that the creative process, creating, expressing, hearing other people create, you know, I think that's something that is necessary, you know,
absolutely.
Especially as a creative, a person who I'm like always creating things. And so like I had to make a point to like either send myself voice notes, create notes, like type the text, I mean, voice the text, all this stuff, because normally I'm driving or something come to my head. And I know I got like at least 2 platinum records in my head. Right. Probably a literary prize somewhere. Yes. for a poetry book. Probably,
it's just moved.
Yeah, it's just it doesn't stop. So so I love being creative. So that's
we gotta find you an outlet.
Hey, I agree. Well, you know, so I'm here for it. I'm here for the whole thing.
We gonna need the people. We gotta share some resources.
That's right. Come
on. Get the man back on the microphone.
Get me plugged back in. That's right. Get me plugged back in.
Okay, so I do want to go back to the very beginning because you have a lot of layers to you.
This is facts. I lived about 3 lives at least.
Sounds like it. I mean, each one can have its own story in itself.
This is fair.
So I do want to start before you actually went to the military.
Okay.
Right. I want to know what was wealth in your household at that time. Mm-hmm. Like, what did finance look like? Not so much as far as the bills, but when it came to education, sure, and understanding what the dollar means,
sure,
what did that look like in your household?
That's a great question. So I think that's the reason why I'm super passionate about wealth building and legacy preservation and creation, specifically in the Black community, you know, be honest with you, because I remember coming up, I was middle class family. You know, my dad was super, like a great leader. He was in the McDonald's business, you know, and worked for corporate, and then he worked for Black owner operators and helped mm-hmm. them, you know, scale their businesses. And I just saw him as a great leader. Like, he was a leader of people. I never saw anybody up close who inspired and held people accountable to the level that he did, you know, and made people want to be better and like show people who they could be. And so that was the biggest gift I got from me. I know you're talking about finance, but like kind of giving you the context of it all. And so my dad, I was a pretty independent kid, I would say. I didn't need a lot of maintenance. You know, I was pretty easygoing.
Were you an only child?
No, not at all. Like, okay. I have 2 older brothers, an older sister, and a younger sister. But in the house growing up at the same time, maybe 3 of us were in the house at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then my older brother was like 6 years older than me and my sister. My sister's 3 years younger. So it was really she and I, right? And so... And we'll get into probably some of the psychological damage effects, psychological dynamics, which might be damaged, but psychological dynamics of that situation. But I was just kind of a dude that followed the rules. You know, I just kind of, you know, I felt like I didn't want to disrupt things. I wanted to always keep the stasis, right? And then being a Virgo, I was all about balance, you know, and everything, you know. So I grew up, and my dad always just said, you know, save your money. You know, and my mom said, don't get credit card bills. That was the 2 levels of financial advice that I think I got.
Me too.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it was very high level, very succinct. Yeah. And a lot of it, my own interest in finance really was just my own personal desire to like want to be wealthy, honestly, mm-hmm. or be rich, you know, and then also be wealthy.
Yeah.
But so I was really good at saving, but I didn't have an education on investing or allocation of assets or anything like that. And so I knew how to go to work, and I knew I definitely like to save my money. And I would even play a game with myself. Like, I try to hide money in an envelope, you know, and like, yes, you know, hope that I, you know what I'm saying? Like, forget about it. And I think I did once. I was successful once. But like, it's hard when you know you hid the money, you know what I'm saying? But I tried. I tried, you know, but it really wasn't a lot of technical instruction, you know, as far as wealth. You know, my dad had some McDonald's stock. He had some different things. And I remember people being at the house, like insurance.
Long ago,
like, yeah, over 40 years ago. So I mean, he's pretty significantly appreciated stuff, you know, for my mom. But all those things, like, so I'm going to talk about that too, right? Mm-hmm. Because I mean, because we talked, had a real conversation. Like, he had that stuff, but then at some point it was liquidated, or like when he passed, yeah, we didn't know, you know, we didn't know what to do from an estate planning standpoint, and like what was still there, what wasn't, what, you know, would have been liquidated. And so it was kind of not a big mess, but it was like some uncertainty, you know, as it related to what was really there for my mom when my dad died. So all those lessons, like all that stuff stuck with me. So I feel like I'm really kind of the first kind of progenitor of the conversation in a formal way, you know, with my family, particularly my nuclear family. And so I think a lot of the things that weren't said have been more impactful than what was said, you know? I definitely make it a point with my sons. I have an 11 and 12 year old, 2 boys. And I like always talk to them about money. I talk to them about saving. I talk to them about allocating, like when they get money for it, for doing extra, you know, things around the house. And now I'll give them this. These guys, they have got that hustle mode in them. So like, they were, hey dad, you know, what can I do to earn some money? Mm-hmm. You know, and I appreciate that. But I started teaching them about, you know, allocating, you know, what I call kind of the 3 dimensions of being. The one is, you know, to give, you know, and I think that's just important for the greater you, like the you that you don't see, you know.
Absolutely.
And then you got the money to live, obviously, which is your everyday stuff. And then you got the money that you have to invest to grow. And that's the money for your future self, you know? And so I talk to my kids about their future selves all the time. And so it's like, okay, yeah, you got to give because, you know, that's God. That's, you know, I say, I don't even tell you what to give to. I say, but you have to give to something greater than you. You have to know that it's not, you know, you are a part of something bigger than yourself. You're obviously living your life. So you got to pay your bills, but then also you need to be giving or growing. And that's where your future self benefits. And so we, you know, I do allocations and stuff. And so my kids, yeah, if you earn $10, all right, you got a dollar to put in church, you know, now, because that's where you're at. And you got a dollar. I'm taking a dollar to invest for you, you know, mm-hmm. and you got $8. So if you needed $10, you need to go do some more work, you know, because that whole $10 is not yours. And like legitimately, you know what I mean? We just did that this week, you know, so just showing them in practical terms. We played a cash flow quadrant game for kids, you know, where they bought businesses and, you know, how to do real estate and different things. Just kind of get them in the mindset. Like we talk about entrepreneurship all the time, you mm-hmm. know, everything really that I'm doing now is really setting them up, you know, like they've got, I'm trying to give them that 20-year runway that I didn't get to take advantage of personally, you know what I mean? And so like all the business, all the stuff I'm doing now is like set up for them to be the people who carry that on, you know what I mean? So, and so it's kind of fun because it's a second shot, right? It's like a second chance to kind of do it a different way and like set, like the level that I'm starting on is a different level than where I started, you know, with them, you know? And so I'm, you know, really grateful, but there weren't a lot of tangible lessons, but save your money and don't go into credit card debt. So, you know, I was a good saver. And then I think I rebelled when I went to college. I was like, you know what? I can handle a credit card. I got a credit card. And yeah. So
I think that was me too.
Yeah. That's the devil, right? Yeah. It's like, man, I'm grown. Let me show you, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, but you know, and nothing, one thing I do know and I believe and I've learned is that nothing is intrinsically good or bad. You know what I mean? It's like truly, these are all tools. And it's that's the importance of the conversation because you want people to understand that if you use the tools properly, they can all benefit you. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And but you have to understand what, you know, what your goals are, what you, you know, what you really care about. So I'm gonna slow down.
No, you're good.
I'm gonna let you, yeah. So
that was a real good, as far as segue, what is one tool that you're still using throughout your journey that you learned in the past that you're still using today?
Yeah, I would say actually tax deferred and tax free accounts, just like and insurance.
Break that down.
Yeah. So Roth IRAs, tax and traditional IRAs. And people say that. So first of all, let me say tell you what an IRA is. An IRA is an individual retirement account. I used to be a financial advisor, I used to be a stockbroker, whatever you want to call it, you know, and I would help people with their retirement goals. And people would always come to me like, okay, I've got an IRA. And what they meant was maybe they had a CD or they had a mutual fund, but they didn't really know what that was. And so an IRA, all it is it's a type of account, you know? And so a traditional IRA is an account that you can contribute to if you meet certain requirements from an income standpoint. Don't have to get too technical. Most people qualify. And you can put a certain amount away per year into that account and take it off your taxes, right? In a traditional IRA. So a 401k, which most people are familiar with, that's kind of, I'll be careful with this, but for comparison sake, it's like a IRA on steroids because you can contribute more money to it, right? Mm-hmm. And so most people contribute to their 401k, and that's good because the money that you contribute before you get your check is not taxable. So that's a big thing. So I think one of the things that get overlooked when you talk about finance and growth, you know, this is all going to the story of like what I use still. Mm-hmm. I guess I use the principles more than anything, you know what I mean? So the vehicles, I'm gonna speak to that, but so the IRA and the 401k, they allow you to grow your money because you're not paying taxes on it until a point down the road.
Right.
And then a Roth IRA obviously is one where you've already paid the taxes. So it's called after tax money. And you can put the same amount that you could in a traditional, which is an individual retirement account. And then you get no tax break for it, except for that all the money that grows in it is 100% tax free. And so it's a choice of, do you want to pay your taxes now or do you want to pay your taxes later? And then that's a question for you and your financial advisor or your trusted circle. But, you know, to me, if I can pay my taxes now when I know what taxes are and not pay taxes later, mm-hmm. that's the better move, right? Because you see how the world changes. Tariffs from week to week are different. So you know taxes from year to year are going to be different. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be the cat that when it's time for me to pull my money out to say, hey, bruh, I need 60% of that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I could have paid 20% or 10% or 5%, you know, early on and never pay tax again. So like just little small considerations, you know, like I call it, like a friend of mine called it, you know, money's like a pipeline with water in it. and you just want to fix all the little leaks, you know. Yeah. It's little leaks that really slow you down. It's not that you don't know. And so I definitely believe in the power of using, you know, deferred or tax-free vehicles. So what IRA is that, what goes in the IRA, so the IRA is like a house. The account is a house.
Okay.
What goes inside the house are the investments. And so that's where you get into stocks, bonds, cryptocurrencies.
I had no idea about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah,
I never thought about the breakdown.
Like, yeah, this. So there you go. So I'm grateful that I could share that with you. So the IRA is just the vehicle. It's the house, is the thing that holds all your assets, your furniture. Mm-hmm. And so the furniture is your investments, you know, whether that's bonds, whether it's cash, whatever it is, it's protected in that house. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing I think that is always powerful. I'm a big proponent of what I call self-directed IRAs, not to blow your mind too much, but there is what's called a custodial IRA. Custodial IRA is the one to where you invest in the regular stock market stuff. A self-directed IRA is where you can still use a tax deferred account or a tax-free account being a Roth, and the contribution limits are the same. So let's say if you can contribute $5,000 to a traditional IRA, that's a custodial account, you can only contribute $5,000 to a self-directed IRA a year also. You can always roll over your 401ks into an IRA.
Right.
You know, right. And so, mm-hmm. so that's how you get big amounts in there to be tax-free or tax-deferred, you know, whatever, depending on how you roll it, you know, what amount you pull into there. But the power of a self-directed IRA is that you have a lot more latitude in what you can invest in. And so with people who are real estate investors, you use a self-directed IRA so that you can purchase real estate, people with precious metals, crypto, you know, trading accounts, things like that. If you're, you know, you can still do the regular stuff, but you can do, you know, notes where people are doing loans, you know, promissory notes and things like that. So there are a few things you can't do, like you can't do fine art, you can't do insurance, and you know, you can't do like business with people who are direct family lineage, mm-hmm. right? You know, like your mom, your sister, your son, mm-hmm. or, you know, there's few rules in place, but the rules are so minimal that it's so impactful and powerful to have the wrapping of that type of account to where you can actually control your money, even to the point to where you can actually have what's called an IRA LLC. And so what that is your IRA actually owns a company.
Wait a minute.
With its own tax ID, and the money that you have in your retirement account, you can deploy it into a bank account under your IRA's LLC and go out and do regular business. And so you can have
that's crazy.
Yes, so you can have the full liquidity of your IRA today, mm-hmm. without the taxes and the penalties. Because that's why people don't take money out of their retirement accounts, because that's the deterrent, right? Mm-hmm. I got to pay taxes on it, and I got to pay a penalty if I'm not 59 and a half. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not that age, then the IRA LLC is a way to legitimately run a business, conduct business, and have the liquidity of your IRA that's not tied just to the stock market. So those are some of the things I use, you know, and insurance.
Crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's like,
okay. That was so good. Because my thing is like, I'm 33.
Okay.
Now having these pivotal conversations.
Yeah.
So for me, hearing all the education to where you are today,
yeah.
Where was that pivotal moment for you to start inquiring about these things?
That's a great question. You know, I ask myself that all the time. I'm serious. I'm dead serious.
That was a lot, but I'm sure that came over time.
It was over time.
Having these
having an interest, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a desire to mm-hmm. you know, to take that information. So when I was in college, I was really
at
interested.
West Point?
Yeah, at West Point. West Point. Yeah, I was like, man, I wanted, like, I was interested in finance. So I would, you know, buy the Smart Money magazine or Forbes. Like, you know, I'd just start reading and you know, Investor's Business Daily, the newspaper, and just like start reading, you know, and really just in Black Enterprise, I would just immerse myself, you know what I mean, into the money atmosphere. And I was like, I want to be rich. I mean, honestly. And so, yeah. And so I, you know, and I'll speak to that kind of as a side note. You know, I always question the premise and the purpose of why we even come out to work for money and do all the things that we do. And I know it's a necessary thing in the world that we've created. But I always wonder, like, why do people do the things that they do for money? Or why do people make the sacrifices they do for money? Or why do people even, like, do the bad things they do for money, right? And so yeah. I always ask myself, okay, what's the fundamental principle that is operating behind the desire to obtain what physical money? And it comes back to, okay, what does money represent? You know, and so to me, I'm like, okay, money represents some things we can name, you know, it represents probably choices, maybe some time freedom, mm-hmm. some, you know, geographical freedom, you know, mm-hmm. maybe some speak the mind freedom, mm-hmm. or what people call FU freedom, you know what I'm saying?
So power.
There's some of that, all mm-hmm. that. But I think the biggest thing that money gives you is really kind of the immutable and unspoken freedoms that we haven't really thought about, you know, mm-hmm. and we don't know what those freedoms, what we're going to need throughout the journey, like throughout the course of our lives. We think we do, you know, we right. just like we have kind of an idea of what we want to do with our lives. But life shows us that this thing is a big old crackerjack box. You know what I mean? Like Absolutely. The prize is different every time you open it, you know, mm-hmm. every day. And so what money represents is the possibilities, you know, and that's all good. Like that's all great to like know that money represents possibilities. But I think about why, if it means so much, like all these things that we say we care about, like we want freedom of time, we want freedom of choice, we want freedom of location, we want, right. you know, F you freedom. We want all these things that we can speak to. And then the immutable, unspoken freedoms that we don't know that we really have put words to yet, but we know that we want the option to mm-hmm. have, right? That's where those options. Like, why do we not have as much of it as we desire? Because I know people really, truly desire that freedom, you know, which is represented by money. And so I've come to see that I think that very few of us have really given thought to a vision for our lives. And so that because we don't have that vision for our lives, it's very difficult to quantify what that amount of money should be or what that should look like. And so you hear people, man, I just want to, man, if I hit the lotto, it'd be over. Okay, right? Yeah, a lot of people win the lotto and they go broke or they're worse off.
Sure.
There's, you know, people who play professional sports. I saw a guy on Instagram the other day talking about, I think he had, you know, made $100 million in the NFL and he was broke, you know, or he might be broke on his level. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like whatever he's living broke. On. Yeah. Whatever his, yeah, it's relative. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but he was like, yeah, you know, boom, boom, boom. And I was like, okay, that's another thing. It's the assumptions that we make, you know, we make a lot of presumptions. And so if you assume that you have to do these things or you have to have that, or you have to move a certain way, you're creating constraints on yourself, right? But I think the biggest thing is the vision. I think there's a lack of vision when it comes to a person's life. And that doesn't mean to me that you know what your life will cost. It means that you can truly, if I ask you, like, how do you, like, paint me a color word picture of your life, the mm-hmm. life that you want to have, can you paint me that color word picture? You know, and so, because if you can paint that picture, then that's a vision that can help align how you move.
Absolutely.
And so without that vision, you don't have that alignment and you don't even have a clue about what you really need to do that. I'm not saying you need to do this big financial analysis at all. What I'm saying is you have to plug in to a mental idea of how you want your life to be, how you want it to look, and then connect your emotions to that outcome. And then I think some magic will start happening, but more importantly, I think you'll have to now measure your current life with the life you say you want. And at some point you have to bring some alignment, mm-hmm. you know, but if you never visualize what that life looks like, it's very hard to have alignment, you know? So it's hard for me to say, I want to lose some weight, you know, but I'm eating dinner at 10 o'clock at night. You know? My metabolism is not allowing me to do so.
So let me tell y'all, that's a dig towards me. Okay.
See, I wasn't digging. I ain't even say nobody's names. You know what? But it's cool.
Okay, it's
you
all right. Right. We're doing mm-hmm. better.
Hit dog
We're trying
holla.
To see what we want in the future right so up. We can become that person.
There we go. Come uh-huh. on. That's it. Okay. There you go. Right on. So, you know, have aligning that vision we have for ourselves. And so when it comes back to finances, it's not that we need or want a whole lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's that we want a whole lot of options and freedom and, mm-hmm. and a lot of maybe the ability to deal with life when it comes to us too, right? Because sometimes you've got things that come out of the way that are not positive and money can make it a minor inconvenience or it can make it an emergency, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we're always kind of walking with all of those subconscious ideas, those hopes, you know, and some of those fears. And so we never really get clarity about where we want to go. So we kind of spin in circles because I didn't have. And so I guess when I think about it, and I don't think put it in these terms, but I'm kind of a walking testimony of that, because if you look at my life and kind of my track, nothing really lined up to me being in finance at all. You know what I mean? So I went to be a doctor when I was very young. So I wanted to go to medical school. So I was at West Point, one of my classmates, actually, who is a retired Army colonel, and now he's a cancer surgeon in Bethesda, Maryland. Like, super successful guy. Good friend of mine, Matt Heeman, my dude. He was my roommate, but super smart guy. So Matt, one day, I remember working on a math problem. It was like a nonlinear equation or something. And nonlinear means you got the math problem down here, mm-hmm. and you got a math problem up here. Okay, just for all of us who mm-hmm. got to be on that level, right? Mm-hmm. So we got multiple variables, and so that already threw me off, because now you got multiple variables, bruh. We're going to keep coming up with the same answers. This is a circuit, what they call a circular yes. reference. You know what I'm saying? So I asked Matt, I was like, man, I'm struggling with this. And he's like, oh, okay. First thing you do, you do this. All right. And then you do this. And then there you go. And I was like, oh, wow. That's so simple.
Right.
You're so smart. So for those people who don't know, when you graduate from, I'll speak to West Point, because right. I don't know about the other military academies, but specifically, when you go to West Point, your senior year, you pick your branch. And so medical corps, at least straight out of school, you only have maybe 8 to 10 people who can go to medical school. And so Matt wanted to go to medical school. My roommate, who was super smart, just taught me some math that my teacher couldn't even teach me.
Okay.
And I made that decision right there. I was like, okay, I'm not going to medical school out of West Point because I'm competing with my roommate. And so I'm going to study English, which I love. So I became a literature and philosophy major, and I minored in information systems. And got my little engineering degree, and moved on. So I got a concentration in English, a minor in IT, mm-hmm. a military school, military officer, corporate America, worked for Georgia Pacific. I was a manufacturing company. And so how does this dude become a stockbroker, become a currency trader, and so on and so forth. And so it was truly that, honestly, trying to align my life with my vision. So I remember, this was in the late 90s. And so I remember going to Barnes & Noble, like on weekends when I had downtime, and I would just be studying. I go through the financial, planning aisle, and I just get books and I just start reading. Beautiful. Yeah, I read, I get the magazines. I'm like, what does it take to become a financial advisor? Oh, you got fee-only planners. You got, like, that's what I learned. Okay, you got fee-based planners. You got fee-only planners. I'm like, okay, what do you need? An ADV? Okay, all right. If you want to get your licenses to do this, you got to be sponsored by. And so I just started doing the work to kind of learn about the thing. And I was aligning myself with the vision I had for myself. Mm-hmm. And then literally one day, like a month or so after September 11th, actually, like maybe a month after, maybe 2 weeks. Yeah. So, I'm sorry, 2 months. A headhunter called me. I remember I was sitting in my apartment on my couch, and the headhunter called me. He was like, "Hey, we're looking for, military officers and NCOs, junior officers who want to be financial advisors, and I got a client who's interested. Can you fly to New Jersey?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, can you fly to New Jersey, like, at such and such a time?" I'm like, "Yeah, okay, we'll send you a ticket. We'll fly you up there." And so I flew up there, interviewed.
That was so easy.
You know what I'm saying? Exactly. That's how. And so, I interviewed and, went through a series of interviews. One of my managing director that the final interview with was a West Pointer. And, boom, it's done. But that serendipitous moment came through the alignment of what I wanted and mm-hmm. my action that I took mm-hmm. without having a clear path. I think we sometimes get stuck on how am I going to do it, as opposed to saying, okay, what do I want? All right, what can I do today? What can I do right now and see what happens, right? And so I think that really aligning your vision and taking action on that is the biggest gift you can give yourself. And so even in finance, whether you know or don't know a thing, like commit to, like, what would the person that I want to be, what would they be doing? What version of myself? I don't know all the things, but when I think about this, when I think about being, a guy who has, a house on a beach in different places, like, what does that feel like? Okay. Yeah. Am I the guy who's operating right now or the girl that's operating right now to where I'm even putting myself in a position to do that? Like, am I managing my regular finances in a way to where it says I'm being organized and responsible? Not that I'm wealthy, not that I have a lot, but like, am I managing what I have in a way that tells God, the universe, the ether, that you are truly serious and wanting on a deep guttural subconscious level? Do you really believe that you can be this person? And if you really believe that you can be that version of yourself, like, amazing things start happening, but you have to take that action, And I'm a walking testimony to how you live three lives at one time. And, I didn't even think about it, but I just started walking it out. And then next thing I know, I'm working at Merrill Lynch and, Got recruited Edward Jones, and I went and started my own company, you know, and I've been in business for myself for over 20 years, 21 years. Yeah. So I'm grateful, you know, and it's not easy, you mm-hmm. know, but commitment to that bigger vision, you know, first of all, I think it allows you to not lack a sense of urgency, right? Because you do have to have some type of sense of urgency, like commitment, like, hey, I got to get up and do it, right? Got to make it happen. You don't have to rush, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's one of the things as a trader, as, you know, as a financial advisor, I always tell people, you don't have to rush, you know, you'd be amazed that just slowing down, taking your time will get you so much further. You know, you just got to start and you got to commit, you know, if you commit to that goal, to that future self, to that outcome, whatever, you know, that vision, and it may be a vision that is a 30-year vision, you know what I'm saying, or a 20-year vision, and you like, well, you thought it was a 5-year vision because you could see it so clearly, but then it takes you 25 years, and if you don't quit, if you don't faint, right, if you faint not, I believe you will receive. Like, I really do. I believe that, like, you have to, like, persistence and getting up every day and putting in the work will get you further than your intellect and a lot of things. You know what I mean? Like, I really believe that. You don't need, like, we need so much less than we think we do, you mm-hmm. know? And so yeah, I just, I committed to it. I maybe was just ignorant enough to not know anything else, right? It's mm-hmm. like, hey, if I want it, I'll go get it.
Yeah, that's what you wanted.
Yeah, I really did.
I really did, man.
I mean, I was working in a plant, supervising, managing people. And that was a fast track management. So I was, you know, they were planning to put me into leadership, executive leadership, but that's not where I was at. Like, I wasn't feeling that. I mean, it was cool. The money was cool. I had a job, had a chance to work for Amazon back when they weren't making no money, and they were paying a good money. Like, mm-hmm. they were paying close to $100,000 a year then, you know what I mean? So that was a great opportunity, but that wasn't in alignment with what I wanted, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, not that I didn't do it for that reason, but it was like,
you
take it or leave
else.
It. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wasn't tripping, you know? And so, and I didn't even actually know the value of the opportunity then, because Amazon was not what it is today.
Right.
You know, it was an online bookseller that was becoming something else. Right. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So it was like, it was totally different. And so anyway, I just realized that, hey man, you can get it. Like mm-hmm. in America, you got a shot. I mean, say what you will about it, but like, this is one place that you can truly, if you want to become or even recreate yourself, because sometimes, you know, we get into that mode of, well, man, I'm this, or I've been through this. I had these scars. I've had these bruises, these bumps. People know me as this. You know, I used to be a stripper. But I mean, if I was, I wouldn't be mad about it. You know, I would own it.
It is what it is.
Right. I mean, it is what it is. Exotic dancer, by the way. That's what I was. but you know, it doesn't matter, right? So,
right.
Oh,
right.
Man. So, but just like own your journey, right? Mm-hmm. Just be authentic, like own your journey and never feel ashamed for your journey. You know what I mean? Like, just really, and I think because there's so much self-imposed shame that the world didn't have to shame you. You know what I mean? Like, we wake up with ourselves every day, and it's so hard sometimes to get out of our own way, you know? And so, like, you don't have to share all your plans with people. You got to convince yourself first. You know what I mean? Can you live with your plans? Do you believe that you deserve what it is that you want? And so, I don't know. A lot of things I just take are principles with me, mm-hmm. and then practical stuff, like, yeah, it's the the IRA and the insurance stuff. But I just, you know, I'm an advocate that, like, until you die, it's never too late. Like, it's literally never too late. Like, that next day can be the day that everything changes, you know?
I agree.
Yeah, so.
So I want to ask you a question regarding, like, getting started.
Okay.
Let's say I'm in a predicament of either getting a new job opportunity that provide much of a raise that I've ever seen before in life, right?
Sure.
Or I get a client. This client is now, I know I got a 12-month contract with them, and I know the money is coming.
Right.
With that being stated on the other end, and I'm seeing this extra money come in, what do I do as far as first step with the additional funds? If I want to go into trading, if I want to do the IRA, like whatever that may be.
Great question.
What should I do now that I'm seeing there's a difference? Mm-hmm. I'm waking up, I'm doing all the things, I see myself leveling up every day, and now I'm seeing the residuals, everything is coming together.
Right, right.
So now that I'm seeing this, what would be the plan and how would we get started to creating that life?
That's a great question. Wow, that's an excellent question. So going back to allocation, I believe in allocation. Now, and I had a kind of a little barrier. I meant to look at it before I came in so I could remember, but I'm just going to kind of give you a hypothetical. But like I had even a barrier to where, okay, if you're making if you're bringing in $100,000 or less a year, this is what you need to do. If you bring in more than $100,000, you need to do, right? Right.
And so, oh my gosh.
Right. And yeah. So, and just only from the standpoint of like getting people to take action, right?
Is it
so,
on your phone? Because we could use that.
Let me look it up. Let me see. I know I texted somebody who was asking, one of my cousins was asking me a question. Let me look his name up real quick and I can read it. Okay. So this is what I said. Man. So he said, how much do you think I should start off with? That was the question. Mm-hmm. I said, man, that's such a personal choice. I normally tell people making up to 100K per year to use this formula. So 5% give, whatever that means to you, 10% save, high yield savings account, and I'll share a website. 20% invest, this is the answer to your question of how much, and then 65% to live. And then over 100%, you just change the give from 5% to 10%, and then live from 65 to 60, and all the else stays the same. So you take a little bit more from your live to your give. And and the premise behind that is that you can't not live, you know, and so, but you can't not give and you can't not grow. You got to do all three.
That's
you know what
good.
I mean? And so, yeah. So create a formula for yourself that says, no matter what, if I'm at this level, this is what I'm going to do. So don't feel bad about not giving as much today. But once you get to that threshold, you double your giving immediately and it doesn't hurt you. You know, it's not hurting you and you're still lining up to that greater self. You're still investing in your future self by putting that, you know, that additional money on that 20% away. And then, you know, you're living off a smaller percentage, but off of a bigger number. You know what I mean? And so, like, just I think that's kind of where I would start, right? Allocate my resources from a percentage standpoint first and start with cash, right? I mean, so when I say invest, go open up. I would personally open up a...
I got excited. I'm sorry.
Right. That's cool. That's cool. Uh-huh. I would... It's so much a situation, but I would say the first thing is if I didn't have an IRA... I would go open up an IRA with that and start funding that, right? Mm-hmm. That's because you want to get the easy stuff out of the way. You know, at a certain threshold, if you're over 100K and an individual, you might not be able to do the Roth, but you can do a non-taxable traditional IRA contribution. Not a non-deductible traditional.
Okay.
And then the beauty of that is you can, not to get too technical, you can convert that to a Roth with at a certain point. If you don't take a tax deduction, they'll let you convert it because it's after tax money anyway. And so what I would do is I would get some type of IRA. If I could do a Roth, I'd do a Roth first. If I could do a traditional, I'd do a traditional. And go, if you have a financial advisor or somebody you trust, or even somebody at your bank, like they should have a bank, a financial advisor department. You don't have to use them, but they're your resource. You're banking with them. So like ask them the questions. Hey, I'm interested in this. And they'll probably try to sell you some stuff. Just know that. But say, hey, I'm here for an IRA and I'm not here to invest it right now. I'm just want to get into the habit of saving the money. Mm-hmm. Right. And so open the IRA, max it out the best you can. If you're an entrepreneur, open up a solo 401k. So there's a solo 401k that's just like a 401k, and you can put tens of thousands of dollars in that, like, and take a tax break either as an employee or as an employer. Yeah,
no
yeah,
idea.
Yeah. So all that's
okay,
there.
Okay, keep them going.
Yeah,
keep
yeah. So going. So I was some type of tax efficient account for sure. Mm-hmm. I prefer. Ultimately, you want to get to. Well, you just want to do that. You want to do tax efficient investing. So. If you're an entrepreneur, do that solo 401k. If you're just an employee, you know, start doing your traditional IRA or your Roth IRA or whatever you can
sometimes
do.
Sometimes they'll match it.
Right on. Yeah, well, and, well, if you're doing the 401k, they will. But I'm just talking about money that you control. You know,
okay,
so yeah,
sort
of right. Yeah, outside of that, right? Because yeah, so the 401k stuff, that you know, that's a lot of rules and stipulations around it. But this IRA stuff. This is your money that you can do a couple things with and, you know, and you can actually use that money, right?
Or,
and I'm not saying like in life, but you can invest and you can take control, take charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would get that going first and get into the habit of just seeing my money go into the different buckets, right? I mean, the give bucket, the live bucket is there anyway, and then the invest bucket is there. And the invest doesn't mean that I'm putting money in the market today, but over the course of a year, now I know I can confidently invest. Or save, now I'm confident in my decision-making, you know, say, okay, now I'm okay with partnering with this because my lights didn't get turned off. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got money for that. But then in the course of you saving that up, so let's say over the course of a year, you just want to give yourself that runway and you had an additional $1,000 a month that you could put back from all you were doing. So you got, you know, 12 grand or whatever in the different places that you can put it. And now what I will be doing is educating myself a little bit on the markets, of course, over the course of a year, right? So you don't high yield savings account, they may pay you 5%, 4%, 5%, you know, and all you want to do is basically beat inflation or be like right above inflation so that your money is not losing value while you're taking that year to learn. So now, hey, what is saving? What is investing? Like real basic questions, you know, the government, the FDIC.gov site has something called Smart Money Moves or something like that. It's like a completely free program. Mm-hmm. You can go in there and you can show, basically, the beauty I like about this is that now you can go on that site, FDIC.gov, go to the site and read through it, and you can audit it yourself and say, okay, well, I know what a checking account is. I know what a savings account is.
Yeah. Right?
And so now you say, okay, yeah, uh-huh. but you started preschool, and now you can move all the way up through graduate school, right? And so so now it's like, okay, I can see where I am on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Nobody has to tell me. I've got this free resource that I can see, okay, this is where I'm at. I'm at investing. I'm at stocks and bonds. Okay, what does that look like? Okay, I can invest in a stock, which is one company, one horse. That may be a fast horse, but that horse may get might pull a hamstring, you know, right. might break a leg. So that horse might be fast, but it's risky. So, okay, what's something else I can do that's similar to the horse? Maybe I can buy an index fund. So now I've got 100 horses in my stable. And so if one horse is hurting, another horse isn't, you know, and so that's another way to stabilize your thing. And so you're just learning.
Is that like the S&P 500?
Yeah, S&P 500. That's okay, an index, right? Exactly, right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, exchange traded funds offer different indexes. And so, so you get into like, hey, like learning what's what. And that way you're not feeling the pressure to take action. I think so many times we rush. A guy I knew, another West Pointer who was ahead of me, but we worked at Edward Jones together. And he came there like in month two, he just started blowing the doors off of it, like literally just killing all the records. He was amazing. So we were talking one day and I asked him something and he took it back to the military. He was like, well, he was an infantry officer. He said, I used to tell my lieutenants all the time, don't rush to failure. And so that's a phrase that I always kept with myself. It's like, don't rush to failure. Like, just because you can take action or you feel like you should be taking action doesn't mean you need to take that level of action. You know what I mean? Like sometimes taking action is starting to allocate your funds into different buckets. The next taking action is I'm going to start educating myself, you know, on the different type of houses I can have my money in, you know, and then I educate myself on what kind of furniture can I put in that house? You know, I can put stocks, I can put bonds, I can put, you know, mutual funds. I don't believe in mutual funds like that because they're super inefficient. Right. But in, you know, ETFs, exchange traded funds, which are more economically efficient, right? So like you start learning about, so you can educate yourself in a way that doesn't feel like you're under pressure.
Right.
And then, right, you don't feel overwhelmed and you don't feel like, okay, I made this mistake. Or more importantly, you know, you start investing and inevitably the first month you put your $1,000 in the market, it's $980 at the end of the month. You're like, I knew this didn't work. You know, like, you're like, man, you lost $20. You spent $100 at a restaurant last night. I don't want to hear about $20 in the stock market. Right. You know what I mean? Like, and so have a long-term vision, you know, for that. But so when you have that long-term vision, kind of bring it all together, try to keep cohesiveness. When you have the longer-term vision, you can act with intention and you can also act with what I call tactical patience. You can slow down a little bit and kind of get the landscape and walk, just keep moving forward. You don't have to take big steps, but just keep making steps forward through my education. And so that's, I think, the easiest way. Go find free resources that you can trust and just start finding out where you are on that journey and then start there and build on that. You know what I mean? And while putting money into tax efficient vehicles. Is that, did that answer
your
question?
No, that was good. Yes, okay, good. Okay. Awesome. So we're going to go into our next segment. Okay. We're going to talk about highs and lows.
All right.
And highs and lows is any part of your journey. Okay. It could be family. It could be friends. It could be in the army. Sure. It could be whatever landscape you want to go.
Gotcha.
Let's start with the high first.
Okay.
So anything as far as like an advice, any type of support, like you mentioned with your kids, you know, anything of that sense that we can celebrate you and you can celebrate yourself.
Right on. Thank you. That's very kind. Whew. Well, the highs. I'm grateful. Well, the high is that I've literally been an entrepreneur for 21 years this year. Like February is my 21st. This month is my 21st year being an entrepreneur. And so being on my own, you know, and I'm grateful for that. You know, it's been a roller coaster. It's been highs and lows, but I'm giving myself flowers for that.
Cause it's so easy to quit.
Yeah, it is. It's super easy to quit. And it's easy to be down on yourself, you know, and not really take stock of what you've done. Like I was thinking this morning, I'm like, man, I was taking my walk this morning. I know, get up and I take my walk, right? And so I'm walking through the neighborhood and I normally have like a speaker, so I'm listening to a podcast or something. But at some point I kind of just zoned out and I started thinking, I'm like, man, it's so dope. Like I actually have been able to take walks to my neighborhood at like 10 o'clock in the morning
yes.
on a random day. And like, that's a blessing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm grateful for that. Like, that's an accomplishment. You know what I mean? To do it to where people see you and they recognize you and expect to see you, you know, it's like, okay, when the one off, you know, and sometimes we don't celebrate the small things, you know, because the small things are really big. From a helping other standpoint, I would say, so I'm a trader. I know we haven't gotten to that too much, but I trade the currency markets primarily. I teach people how to trade and, you know, I've got some other stuff going on, but I have my group of West Point buddies. We have a little chat group, and back around COVID, people were kind of more interested in the market because people were at home. And, you know, so coming out of COVID, somebody asked me about Tesla, right? And so I gave them an analysis of Tesla, like told them where it was. Well, I put a video out saying that I was shorting Tesla, meaning I was selling Tesla because I expected it was going to go down in value. And it's on YouTube. You can find it there. And so I sold it and it went down. It went down way further than I thought it was going to go. So, but it worked out. And so the market was, it was down from like between $600 and $800 a share when I shorted it or sold it. And it got down to like $100-something a share over the course of several months. And so I'm watching it now because my friends got me involved. And so I'm like, okay, let me see, you know, let me see what's going on with this thing.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, I see. I think it's bottoming out. And so I told my boys, I was like, okay, I think, you know, we may get to a point where you want to prepare to, if you want to get some of this stock, you want to get in now.
Uh-huh.
So I called on the day, I told them to buy it. And then it finally, it piddled around like within 2 or 3 days, it finally hit the price point I told them to get in at. And then it, like, it went up. I gave them targets, you know, where they could get out and all this stuff. Like, gave them the whole game. Mm-hmm. And one of my buddies who is still in finance, who's a big time at a big, big brokerage firm. And he said, well, I took your advice. I bought some options, man. He said, man, if I had held on a little longer, I would have fully paid for my kids' college, man. I thank you. I owe you a steak, you know? And so it's, I laughed and I love that dude to life anyway. So I'm glad that he won, but I'm like, I love this. Like, I love sharing and showing people like this thing doesn't have to be a mystery. Like this thing, like this is truly actionable. And I have come to absolute certainty that there's nothing on this planet when it comes to money that if there are billionaires involved or trillion dollar companies involved, it's not random.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even so banks are trading.
Correct. So yes. And so I'm like, there's no randomness. If you have a $6 trillion a day industry, which Forex is, foreign currency markets is over $6 trillion being exchanged on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. There's no way that somebody's leaving that to chance. Absolutely. You know what I mean? And so when you understand that, it first of all gives you a little bit of peace because you're like, okay, there's a way that you can actually hop on this elephant and ride this elephant yourself. Yeah, sure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You don't have to be out here getting stepped on. You can literally learn how to rock with them, you know?
Sure.
And so I just, you know, I tell people anyway, so as a trader, it's really cool to just, like, share things with people and then they see them come to fruition. And sometimes it doesn't work out, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so being real, like it doesn't always hit exactly how you want it to, but
right.
I would say 7 out of 10 times for me, at least.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, as far as me and mine,
okay.
I know.
Right?
We at 7, 8 out of 10, right? We hit high numbers. You know what I mean? So we getting there, you know. But yeah. So that's my high for it, like myself, and then for others. And then a low is like a combination. It's a relational and a business thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually is fairly recent, over the last couple of years. So maybe this is 26 or 23. I reconnected with an old friend, former friend. And he was opening a restaurant. So I went to his restaurant opening. We talked and he had a business like for doing funding. He would help people get business funding, whatever. And so we, in the middle of our conversation somewhere, he was like, man, I need like a place for these people to put some of this money that they're getting so they can start generating income. Cause a lot of them are like either newer businesses or, you know, whatever. And so I put my, you know, put my thinking cap on and I was like, okay, well, how can I help? He said, well, I'm just looking for options. And so I was like, okay, well, they can, you know, maybe trade. You know what I mean? Now, I'm looking at it and I know how people move and most people don't like that process. Even though you start learning it, they're not going to learn it in time to start generating cash flow in the first year. You know what I mean? Like just being honest, like it's like being in school. You got to go through that.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because that's where I'm at with like I want to learn more. Mm-hmm. I feel like. Not even foundational wise, but I just feel like it's so many elements.
Yeah, you
can't rush it.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And just be patient with it, you know. But that wasn't serving his people in the way he was saying. So I was like, okay, well, instead of them taking that money and putting it in the market, especially if they're new, or even giving it, you know, to one of my programs where we could, you know, trade copy and all that stuff, which had been happening for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, now prop firms, these things called prop firms are popping up, right? These proprietary trading firms, they've been around for a while, but like they really exploded in the last 4 or 5 years. And so I'll share with you what that is first, and then I'll kind of continue the story. So I had traded for prop firms before. There was a guy in Utah who had a firm. And so they take you through all these different tests. Like they test how you trade, how much you lose on a trade, how much can you make? Like they give you, like, it's like a whole boot camp full of stuff. Nice. And yeah, so you pass those things and then they give you like real money. This company did. So I passed the challenges or whatever. And I, you know, I got funded. Yeah, I got funded. And so I was like, this is pretty cool. And his concept was very different than a lot of what's out there now where people aren't using real money, which perfectly fine. That's okay. But it's more like a casino now because there's so many games and so many gotchas to it to where you have to pick the right company. So nevertheless, I'm thinking, okay, prop firm money is probably a better play for these people than using their real money. So what does that mean, right? So if you are trading your own money, let's say if you've got $10,000, you know, you put that in the market and you trade it or whatever, and it goes down, that's your $10,000 going down.
That's it.
Right. Or prop firms allow you to either buy what are called funded accounts or buy what are called trading challenges, kind of what I was talking about with the guy. And when you take the trading challenge, you abide by certain rules, you know, and they have like really strict rules. And then once you pass it, though, you're trading and you can take income off of that account. But instead of having a $10,000 account, maybe you have a $50,000 or $100,000 or more, you know, account that you can trade. Right. And so, yeah, so the zeros are bigger. Right. Yeah. Now, remind you, this is simulated trading, but they pay you like it's a real account. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, this is perfect. This makes sense. So your people can, you know, we can set up, you know, redo the model to where they're still getting my trading course because I want them to learn how to trade. I definitely was an advocate of that, people being empowered, right? Because you got to be empowered at some point, self-empowered. And so part of it was the trading course. And then part of it was the done-for-you trading to where you use a prop firm money and we'll trade. And then, you know, you copy my trades and then, you know, whatever money you make, you keep.
Action.
Yeah, you keep it. And so it started off going really well. It was pretty small. And people were kind of, we were passing the challenges, people were getting funded, and, you know, things were going really well. And then the company changed technology platforms, and that was like a wrench. And so like, okay, boom. Now it's taking me an hour to send my trades out to the people where it will take me like 10 seconds. Now it's like taking me 10 times as long or whatever, six, you know. And so I'm like, okay, that sucks, but we can push through it. And then when I talk about, I think we talked about changing, kind of making set aside for people, like when you have a business model, right? And so one of my members, I had my payment portal where so they paid me $15,000 to enroll in this program. So it wasn't cheap.
Half
of it was for learning. It was lifetime membership. You can learn. And then the other half was for me to trade for you for a year or to copy my trade, whatever. And so a genius concept, I thought, like, you know what I mean?
That was really
right. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's real money except for you paying your tuition. Mm-hmm. And then, one of my guys, he wanted to wire the money to our company, which we hadn't set it up that way, but it was okay. So we say, okay, yeah, wire the money. And he went to his bank and said, or maybe it was a credit union. And he said, well, I want to wire this money. And they were like, what's it for? You know, it's over $10,000. And so they were like, he said, it's for an investment. Now I told him, I said, well, if you do this, you got to let them know it's an enrollment, it's a membership fee, it's tuition.
Yes.
It's not an investment because I'm not investing this money. But as soon as he said that, red flags went off. And I remember I was traveling and checking into a hotel. My accounts were frozen, like all kind. It was crazy. And I didn't think anything of it. I thought it was like maybe a fraud alert or something on my account because I was staying at a really nice hotel. And so, and I'm not a big credit guy. So like, if you're going to hold some money on my debit card, okay, cool.
You're going to know.
I ain't tripping. Yeah. Exactly. And so I thought the people I was banking with called me to confirm, okay, is this your hold on your account?
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And so they started asking me questions about my client and all this stuff. And so I'm like, okay, well, maybe that was a security question. Totally not tripping at all. And a few months later, some of my clients, because I had members all over the country, so like people were calling me and they were like, somebody just called me from the Securities Exchange Commission. The SEC just called me and they're asking questions about you and how I know you. And I was like, I thought they were scammers because I'm like, I mean, I don't know you, but then they knew so much, it freaked them out. So they were like, I just wanted to let you know. And I told them I ain't talking to nobody without an attorney.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, thank you for letting me know. And so at that point, I'm like, okay, well, let me go get my own attorney because clearly, you know, you ain't asking about me for no reason.
Correct.
And so anyway, I go get an attorney and we find out what they want. Eventually, they reach out and say, we want to talk to you, you know, about this program that you run in or whatever. And so, and it was very successful. Like in the short amount of time, I mean, it had grown and it was good for us as a company. And, you know, things were in the right way. Even we were dealing with some technical issues, but it was like, okay, as long as it was in tech, yeah, stuff that we can work through. But then when the SEC got involved, it became really tough because now I'm spending money on attorneys. I'm flying out. I flew out. I had to fly out of town to go meet with them. Like, they're reaching out. And so I eventually get an attorney and find out what they want. And they want to know about the program. So my first thing is, now my attorney is a former federal prosecutor for financial stuff, like big institutions.
So he's familiar
with this. Knows the space back and forth. And so he's looking at it and he's like, they don't regulate currency trading. Like, that's the CFTC. You're not operating a fund. You're not taking anybody's money to invest it. Like, all the things. And so they said, well, this may be considered an unregistered security as far as we're concerned, you know? So like, you haven't registered the security with this. I'm like, this is crazy. Anyway, so we get through
it. Was reaching.
Right, in a real way. So, but like, it's like a dog on the bone. Like, you ain't gonna there's no way they're gonna let it go now, right? Mm-hmm. So fast forward, we end up now my friend, the person I really even started this vertical for, you know, he's there because they're asking him questions because he was one of the salespeople and probably benefited the most from it, you know, essentially. And so anyway, we're going through that. And then at a certain point, I can't get him on the phone. Now, I understand because we're dealing with a legal issue. So I'm like, okay, I understand that we don't need to really have no substantive conversations. But like, I feel like there's a way we can check in and know each other. Like, in this world that we live in, there's a way to see if brother's all right. You know what I'm saying? And so like, they went completely off the grid, like completely like left me on red, you know, that kind of deal, whatever. And so I'm like, okay, all right, I see how you kind of moving, but we'll see. Once we get to the other side of this, we'll see how you move. And so, like, no better, but you know, borrowing money, like, cause he was going through some personal issues. So, I mean, he's into me now for like tens of thousands of dollars that as a friend, as a brother, you know, I was willing to lend him, you know, but now he won't return my calls, you know? And then we got this thing. And so anyway, we end up, you know, my attorney comes back and says, all right, so they want to settle. I'm like, what?
Oh, right.
And they said, well, they will settle without like saying that you violated securities laws or anything like that. But your company, you know, we have to settle for a certain amount. And I was like, okay, how much do they want? And so they said, well, this is the fine. And then they throw like some sauce and gravy on it. So like what they call, I think, engorgement or something. And so they end up saying, well, we'll settle with you for $852,000. And so I'm like, that's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Or you have to go to jail.
It was civil. It wasn't criminal. It was civil. So I want to be clear about that. So it wasn't it wasn't like a fraudulent thing. It was just they felt like I didn't check the box, you know. So nevertheless, they say, well, you can settle and you can't be in securities business anymore. And I hadn't been in the securities business in decades. So it was whatever we were selling on personally didn't bother me, honestly. Right. I was pissed off because I felt like it was definitely bullying.
Yes.
But nevertheless.
Red taping.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I asked my attorney, what is the flip side of that, right? So because he wanted to go to court. He was like, yeah, I think, you know, we definitely have a strong case that we can go and fight this in court. And so I said, so what does that look like? You know, he's like, well, you know, of course, I got to bring on some more attorneys to do the case, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And he's being real. And so I'm like, all right, so what if we get there and like, tell me about that. He's like, well, yeah, we can get there and they can still fine in our favor and still you might have to pay a fine. And if you don't take the settlement, they reserve the right to triple the amount, right? So it goes from, you know, 8 to 2.4. And so I'm like, and I'm saying, I got to pay my attorney along the way, no matter what happens. And I was like, well, the math doesn't work out for me. Like, I don't need this. So we'll agree to the settlement, you know? Yeah. So we settled last year for the $852K or whatever. But in the midst of that, so that's a down for real. Like, it's a real down, you know what I'm saying? So the friendship is gone and that business is gone. Like, but that was good for me though, because I did a lot of reflection in that. And so I was asking myself a lot of questions, you know, and that's a big part of the reason why I decided to retire. It was like, okay, you know, I don't, there's so much in my life that I'm allowing in that has no real positive, like the positive impact isn't positive enough for me to go do it. And the negative impact is too great for me to do it. You know what I mean? Like the risk reward is not worth it. And that's dealing with a lot of people that you didn't have alignment with. Right. And I was a big advocate of alignment and I thought I had alignment with a person. I didn't have it. So that was my down. Right.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful too, because it really brought me back to a place of introspection. And I was like, okay, why do I find myself on these little journeys to where I'm helping people? And I know I have a heart to help people for sure.
You
right?
really do.
Thank you, love. I appreciate you. But everybody doesn't deserve your help the same way,
That's true.
And so I had to really get real with myself. And so you talk about the sibling thing. That's where I was the person who always kept the balance. So one of my older siblings, he would always get into trouble. Super smart, but he would get into trouble, you know, when he was a teenager, you know, stealing cars, doing all kinds of stuff, you know. And then my younger sister, she's a baby girl. So, like, you know, she can be her own kind of troublemaker, but, yeah, like, she's still the baby girl. Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. And so I was just, like, the good kid who never gave any trouble. And when I thought about it, I was like, I didn't realize that I have been really using my intellect to be seen my whole life, because mm-hmm. that was the only way I could be seen, like through academic recognition, through perfect attendance, through all these things, and like going to West Point. And not that I didn't want to do those things, but when I looked at it, it was like, hey, that was my shouting out to the world, mm-hmm. you know, and I just continued that. And it had benefited me, you know, it's benefited me, but also I'm like, but there are a lot of takers, you know? And so if you're a giver, there's takers waiting to take, you know, and you don't know it until it goes bad who the real takers are a lot of times, you know? And so I just had to get real with myself. And I'm like, really, the majority of why I get up in the morning is under my roof, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And so why am I putting myself at risk for anything that is not evolving that wealth legacy that I'm creating in my own house?
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And so I came to terms with stuff and got better at not only saying no, but hell no, mm-hmm, and like really real F strong. You and not even caring, mm-hmm. right? Like, I don't care what you think or nothing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's, I just shifted gears and say, okay, when was the joy? The joy was when I was teaching dads how to trade. I had 4-H for dads, teaching dads how to trade so they didn't have to go get a second job, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And they wouldn't miss out on real moments in their family's lives, you know? Like, what I call living in the fullness of their humanity. I think we talked about that, right?
That,
you know?
Was beautiful.
And so that was dope, because the guys I was impacting and meeting, and they were coming to the classes, and we had online classes, we had in-person stuff, and I'm teaching Forex in barbershops. I mean, it was dope. It was so much fun. And the money got better with the different, like, people asking me to do different echelons. Mm-hmm. And like, what about Forex? That's how we became the Forex family, because women were like, well, what about the ladies? You know, everybody wants to be included. And I respect that. But I felt like my true calling on that particular mission was Forex for dads. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's where I saw the greatest joy and the greatest impact. Not necessarily successfully with them, I mean, financially, because it was like, it was a relatively small group, but the impact is great. You know what I mean? And so this is kind of an alignment thing again, right? First of all, being aligned with self, and then mm-hmm. on those principles, making sure that your alignments are also together. You know what I mean? And so I always take some lessons. I always take some mm-hmm. things away from it. And, you know, so now I'm freelancing, doing some other stuff that's just more fun for me.
Yeah. But your decision. It's on you.
My choice. Correct. Right. It was a dark period, but I'm grateful for it, because I definitely feel like I've emerged more true to myself. You know?
Absolutely.
So I think that was enough.
You've given us so much. How can people stay up to date with you?
Okay.
If that's website, email, LinkedIn, social media, et cetera.
All right. So the best place, I think, is just to find me on LinkedIn, Kevin L. Jefferson, LinkedIn, I think, /Kev Jeff or something like that. I have a couple websites. We have fmtrades.com, Foxtrot Mike, or FM like a radio station, trades with an S, .com. That's where you can go to learn how to trade any market. We'll teach you how to trade, and you can potentially start making cash flow like in the first week, because I give my students my trades to take. So, because I want us all to win. So that's one site if you want to go learn how to trade. If you want just more insights on the market, you know, maybe I found a lot of professional money managers or higher earning professionals or people who are do-it-yourselfers with their portfolios. We're rolling out a newsletter next month called Vantage Point Macro, or the daily, whatever, the Vantage Point Flow. Mm-hmm. So Vantage Point Macro, that's what it's called. That's the company. And we're going to just give financial intelligence on the markets, right? So, like, help you cut through the noise that's mm-hmm. out here, kind of like what we did with the IRA stuff, but it's more mm-hmm. for active money management. And so people who are already in that vein, they can go to vantagepointflow.com. Now, it will give you an email address, like you got to put your email in, because we're still playing with it, but you can go there too. And that's why I tell people LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest. But yeah, FM Trades, mm-hmm. Vantage Point Flow, and LinkedIn for sure. You know, and shoot me a message on LinkedIn. Like, shoot me a message. I really do respond. Like, it's me. It's not like my secretary or anything like that.
That's right.
Right? You know what I'm saying? And that's the best way to have a real conversation about what may be best for a person if they wanted to meet, you know, and talk about something.
I love that. And we're going to make sure we put it in the show notes so you guys can click and support.
Right on.
All right.
Right
on. So we are going to wrap it up with our motivational moment. And that's usually something that I may see on social media. It may be a Bible verse, whatever the case may be. I bring you here just to give a little bit of motivation towards the end so we can carry it along as we go on our journeys. So for us, it is going to be a quote. And the quote is, wealth is not what you earn, it's what you build, protect, and pass on. So I'm going to share my thoughts. You share your thoughts, and it's a wrap.
Sure.
All right. So when I first heard this quote, I'm going to say it again, wealth is not what you earn, it's what you build, protect, and pass on. And I think that goes back to how we really opened this.
Yes.
Is that it's not for the present, it's for the future.
Correct.
But of course, in order for it to be the future, you got to help build, you got to protect it,
right,
and to ensure that it's passed on the proper way.
Yeah.
And so these conversations that I've been having lately is like, you got to make sure it's protected.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make sure you're intentional. You got to make sure your mindset is right.
Yeah.
And that's the stretch of what it takes to move forward as you're doing the investing, as you're doing the wealth management, all these things.
Right.
And I feel like they all come together, like you mentioned with the water.
Yeah.
Like there's ebb and flows and all the things that we do.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you have to have a plan.
Correct.
Like, exactly. I really do feel like that is like the cherry on top of our entire conversation.
No doubt.
And so that was my thoughts. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah. So, you know, the first thought I have is that obviously when you talk about wealth as a concept, you can get very philosophical. And there is ways to pass on wealth, right? I mean, your name, your family's name, or, you know, whatever you're known for, if you're a nonprofit, or if you, you know, I think about Minnie's Pantry. I remember meeting Cheryl Action Jackson when I moved back to Texas in like 2009, 2010, and we were up at UNT. I was on the board up there. And so we met at some event, and she had a food pantry, you know, and I don't think it was substantial, but it was significant, but it wasn't substantial.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I think it was an honor of her mom or honor a family member. And so nevertheless, I remember seeing her. I was like, man, that's so dope what you're doing. And then fast forward 10 years later, 15 years later, you know, like Oprah and all these people, you know, and she just started and she just took action. And so that was her legacy and the wealth that she's created. It wasn't necessarily a financial thing per se, but it was impact, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the wealth should have lasting impact. You know, I think that's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And so when you talk about the financial piece, that as well, you know, if you do that right, it's not that you start with what you start right now. My dad used to always say, it's not how you drive, it's how you arrive.
So I say, just start,
you know, don't despise what you're starting with. Stay on that journey. And because it's, you can never have that legacy wealth financially or otherwise, impact wise or otherwise, if somebody doesn't start.
Absolutely.
You have to start.
I love it. Well, I am so thankful for you.
I'm grateful for you.
This was so good.
This was really good.
Did you have any last words for the people before we end?
Yeah. I would say, hey, you know what? First, I would say, don't rush the process. Wherever you are in your journey, don't rush that process. Really be present and feel the good and the not good about it. And then, you know, take your time, you know, slow down. You know, the life is longer than we think. Like, no matter how short it is, it's longer than we think. And so just like take that extra step and make your next move meaningful, right? Make that next move meaningful so that you're not just taking action for the sake of taking action. And seek help. Don't be afraid to seek help. We all know a lot, but there's a lot we don't know.
Indeed.
You know what I mean? So let's, you know, let's be humble. Stay hungry, stay humble, stay foolish and curious, right?
There you go. Nice.
Bam. That's all
this
I got.
This was so good. All right, ladies and gents. Well, if you're listening to this morning, noon, evening, or night, thank you for tuning in to another episode of What's Good Podcast, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of What's Good Podcast with your girl, Brianna Javon. If you found today's discussion inspiring, don't forget to hit the subscribe button on your preferred podcast platform. Explore additional resources on our website at whatsgood-productions.com and find our social media links listed in the show notes. Stay tuned for more captivating stories ahead. Until next time, stay blessed and keep uplifting your community.